Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to cut through the noise and give you the key takeaways from some really complex sources.
That's right.
And today, we're looking at something fascinating. The state of Japanese science, technology, academia. Specifically, what it's like for researchers on the ground.
Yeah, we're digging into the challenges university faculty face. It sounds like a real pressure cooker.
And how are we getting this view?
Well, this is what's interesting. We're not looking at, you know, official reports. Our source is actually a really influential Japanese academic blog.
Right.
It's focused squarely on this crisis, trying to figure out how to make research a viable career again. And we're looking at their most popular articles.
So the stuff that really resonated, got the most clicks, the most likes.
Exactly. Based on things like Facebook likes, recent views, it gives us the sort of unfiltered ground level view of what's really bothering the academic community there.
Right. So our mission here is to pull together these concerns, these anxieties, and understand the core crisis this blog identifies. Basically, why the current system in Japanese academia seems to be actively pushing talented young people away from research careers, like discouraging undergraduates from even considering a PhD.
Yeah, it's a serious pipeline problem, and retention, too.
And the sources, they seem to have a pretty clear thesis on this.
They really do. They argue quite strongly that the number one challenge isn't just, say, overall funding levels. It's much more immediate, more human.
Which is?
Job security, specifically for productive researchers.
Okay, unpack that a bit.
The argument is stark. If successful faculty people publishing papers, winning grants, you know, doing everything right, if they face job termination.
Termination meaning fired.
Well, often it's this specific thing called yatoidome. It means their fixed-term contract isn't renewed.
Ah, okay. Not necessarily fired for cause, but just let go.
Exactly. And the blog argues, when productive people hit this wall, how can you possibly convince undergrads to sign up for that kind of uncertainty?
It sends a terrible message.
Right. So the focus, they insist, has to be on the people first, on stability, not just abstract budgets.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's get into the specifics then. How does this precarity, this lack of stability, actually play out day to day? The popular articles must shed some light on this.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not subtle. The articles that get the most traction aren't about, like, philosophical debates. They're about survival guides, hard numbers.
Survival guides. Wow.
Yeah, the engagement data shows this intense, almost desperate focus on hitting specific metrics and avoiding these, well, cliffs.
It sounds less like academia, more like managing quantifiable risk.
That's a good way to put it. Intellectual freedom seems secondary sometimes to just staying employed.
Okay, give us a concrete example. How real are these metrics?
Well, let's start with just keeping your job. There was this one article that got huge attention detailing what they called the firing benchmark.
The firing benchmark sounds ominous.
It was. It discussed the dismissal, the yatoidome, of a professor who failed to produce 20 papers over a 10-year period.
20 papers in 10 years. That's specific.
Incredibly specific. And the fact that this case, this number, became such a talking point with hundreds of likes and shares, it shows this isn't just theory. It sets a hard line.
2 papers a year, basically.
On average, yeah. And failing that specific target could mean you're out, even if you're contributing in other ways, maybe teaching, mentoring.
That must change how you approach research entirely, just chasing publications.
It absolutely does. And look, if that's the baseline just to stay, think about getting promoted.
Right. What does it take to actually move up?
Well, the sources talk a lot about Marugo. It's kind of jargon, apparently.
Marugo.
Yeah. It basically refers to the specific, often unwritten, but widely understood requirements, paper counts, impact factors, that sort of thing, needed to become a full professor.
So another set of quantified hoops to jump through.
Exactly. The whole career path seems structured around hitting these very measurable targets. It's all very numerical.
And to hit those numbers, you need funding. You need resources.
Precisely. Which brings us to the grant system. And guess what? The article with the highest engagement on any practical topic.
Let me guess. How to get grants.
Bingo. 22 tips on how to write a Kakeni application that gets adopted. Huge readership. Hundreds and hundreds of likes.
Okay, hang on. Kakeni, what is that for listeners who might not know?
Ah, good point. Kakeni is the main government funding system for scientific research in Japan. Grants and aid for scientific research.
So like the NSF or NIH in the U.S.?
Sort of, yeah. It's the big one. Highly competitive. And securing Kakeni isn't just about the money. Though that's crucial.
It's a validation thing, too.
It's more than that. It's often the key factor for getting tenure, for promotion, and for protecting yourself against that yadoidome we talked about.
So winning Kakeni is almost like
Right.
life support.
It's pretty close to existential, yeah.
Yeah.
The popularity of chips on how to get it just underscores how critical it is for survival.
Okay, so the picture is intense pressure to publish, like 20 papers in 10 years, maybe?
Minimum, perhaps.
Minimum. You need to hit these Marugo metrics for promotion. You absolutely have to get Kakeni grants. And even if you manage all that,
Uh-oh, here it comes.
the job market itself might be a bit of a sham.
That's the really demoralizing part that also gets a lot of discussion. High engagement around articles discussing the job market illusion,
Meaning?
meaning the widespread belief, or maybe reality, that many university job postings aren't truly open competitions.
You mean they already know who they're going to hire?
Often, yeah. The winner might be predetermined, maybe someone already in the lab, maybe political connections. So you're killing yourself to meet these insane benchmarks.
For a job that might not even be genuinely available to you.
Exactly. It adds this layer of deep cynicism to the whole process.
Wow. Okay. The pressure you're describing to publish, publish, publish against these metrics for jobs that might be illusions, it almost feels like it incentivizes cutting corners.
You read my mind. That leads us straight into the next huge area of concern we saw in the source material.
Which is.
Academic integrity, honesty in research. Ah, so the pressure cooker starts to boil over.
Pretty much, you've got this massive systemic pressure to produce results, quantifiable results, papers, grant applications, and inevitably, that stress impacts the research process itself.
And the blog reflects this. People are worried about it.
Hugely worried. Actually, the second most popular article overall on the blog, we're talking over 1,200 Facebook likes, massive engagement dealt directly with research integrity issues.
1,200 likes for
Yeah.
an article about research integrity. That's a lot.
It tells you how central this concern is. It's not a niche issue.
What specifically were they focused on?
The article highlighted the massive poignat, that's the translation, teriunishiteki sereru of problems, particularly similar or suspicious-looking images in life science papers.
Image manipulation or duplication.
Both,
Yeah.
potentially. It suggests a real struggle within the life sciences, maybe due to the pressure, with ensuring the visual data presented is accurate and original.
And it's not just a general worry, people are actively policing it. Yes, that's another fascinating angle. The sources highlighted an article that gave practical instructions
Instructions on what?
on how researchers could use free image editing software like GIMP or something to actually check and potentially confirm allegations of misconduct in published papers.
Wow, so researchers are essentially being told you need to be digital detectives to trust the literature.
It seems that way. It shows, one, integrity is a massive concern, and two, the community feels a need to self-police, to actively verify work, because maybe the traditional checks aren't enough.
And this isn't just abstract. The blog mentions specific cases.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't shy away from naming names or institutions, which is also telling.
Like what?
Well, there were reports discussed about alleged misconduct and investigations at really high-profile places. Todai Medical Systems, for instance.
Kudo. That's the University of Tokyo, right? Top tier.
Exactly. So when allegations surface there, it sends ripples everywhere. They also discussed a really weird case from Osaka University, something about analyzing mice that apparently didn't even exist in the study.
Non-existent mice. How does that even happen?
Good question. But it highlights how potentially flawed research can sometimes get through the publication process.
Okay, so if researchers are under pressure, worried about misconduct, and maybe can't even trust some published work,
Yeah.
where do they publish their own stuff? That seems like a minefield.
It absolutely is. And that's another major theme reflected in the blog's popular articles, navigating the publishing landscape itself.
Trying to find safe harbors.
Pretty much. There's an intense focus on figuring out which journals are reputable and which are. Well, the term they use is hagataka.
Hagataka.
Yeah, it literally means vulture, predatory journals.
Ah, okay. Journals that just take your money and publish anything regardless of quality.
Exactly. They prey on that publish or perish pressure. So the community is constantly discussing, is this journal legit? Is that one hagataka?
Are there specific publishers they worry about?
Definitely. There's frequent discussion, questions, back and forth about publishers like MDPI. Specific journals within MDPI even get debated, like International Journal of Molecular Science.
So researchers are crowdsourcing journal vetting on this blog.
In a way, yes, and it's ongoing. Like, recently there was a spike in interest around the question, is Frontiers also predatory? It shows this constant anxiety and difficulty in making safe choices.
Choosing wrong could damage your reputation.
Hugely. Or worse, lend legitimacy to bad science. Alongside this, you also see popular articles offering advice on just coping with rejection, how to accept it and keep going, how to build publishing power over time.
So career precarity, crushing metrics, integrity worries, predatory journals. It sounds utterly exhausting, mentally draining.
It really does. And that brings us actually to the single most popular article on the entire blog, the one with the highest engagement of all.
Higher than the Kakeni tips. Higher than the firing benchmark discussion.
Higher than everything. Around 1,700 Facebook likes.
Wow. Okay, what was it? Some breakthrough discovery.
Nope. It was deeply personal. The title basically translates to, am I cut out for this?
A self-assessment for researchers.
Exactly. It connects everything back to that discouraged student pipeline we started with. When the system is this tough, this precarious, this ethically challenging.
The number one question becomes, can I even survive this? Am I the right kind of person for this?
Precisely. The article apparently contained 31 specific questions designed to help researchers evaluate their own aptitude, their own suitability for this demanding career path.
That's really telling. The community isn't just looking for practical tips. They're looking for fundamental validation. Is it me or is it the system?
Or maybe, is it me enough to handle this system? It's a search for reassurance in a field offering very little external security.
And did this personal focus show up elsewhere?
Yes, definitely. You see other highly specific, very human topics getting traction too, things you might not expect.
Like what?
Like researcher marriage, the challenges of relationships in this demanding field. Or really practical stuff like how to choose the right lab when you're starting out as a grad student or postdoc, trying to make good choices early on.
It's about trying to build some semblance of a normal life around this incredibly unstable career.
I think so. Finding strategies not just for professional survival, but personal survival too.
But it can't be all doom and gloom, surely. Is there anything positive? Any source of motivation?
Yes, and that's crucial. Despite all the negatives, there's still a clear appetite for inspiration.
People need reminding why they got into research in the first place.
Exactly. So articles about legendary figures like the biochemist Shosaku Numa remain popular. Stories of breakthroughs and dedication.
And other motivational content.
Yeah, like a TED Talk by a guy named Tsutomu Uematsu. It's called Omu wa Maneku, which means something like thinking invites or what you think you become. It's about perseverance, passion, that kind of message.
So they need that counterbalance. The practical survival tips on one hand, the inspirational why we do this on the other.
It seems essential, yeah. A necessary dose of hope against all the structural stress.
Okay, one last area. Does the blog show researchers connecting their own struggles to broader issues in Japan? Mm-hmm. Or is it purely academic navel-gazing?
No, definitely not isolated. The concerns absolutely reflect wider societal anxieties.
How so?
Well, for instance, you see popular articles analyzing completely different approaches, like the Finnish school system, suggest they're looking outside for alternative models, maybe questioning Japan's own educational pressures from the start.
Interesting. What else?
Even more striking, there was huge readership back when it came out and still referenced for this 2014 list.
A list of what?
A list of 896 local towns and cities in Japan identified as facing Shumetsu Kanshistoshi.
Which means?
Extinction possibility. Cities potentially disappearing due to population decline.
Wow, that's the national demographic crisis hitting home. Why would academics be so interested in that?
I think it shows they see their work, their careers, their institutions embedded within this larger societal challenge. Where do universities fit in a potentially shrinking society? Who will they teach? Who will fund them?
It connects the micro pressures of their jobs to these macro level anxieties about the country's future.
Exactly. And they're even looking at the very beginning of the pipeline, like discussions about how the math entrance exams for science majors at Todai University of Tokyo have apparently gotten much easier compared to the past.
So they're questioning the foundational skills of the next generation they're supposed to recruit into this tough system.
Right. It's a concern about the entire ecosystem, from school kids up to senior professors facing Yatoi Dome.
Okay, let's try to synthesize all this. What's the big picture from this deep dive?
Well, we've seen this portrait of Japanese academia, at least through the lens of this blog, that's really struggling. There's deep job precarity, intense pressure to hit very specific, quantifiable metrics.
Metrics that can lead to dismissal if you miss them.
Right. Then there's this resulting necessary focus on research integrity, trying to police the system while navigating a confusing, sometimes predatory publishing world.
And on a personal level?
On a personal level, the community is searching for tools just to survive day-to-day kakanee tips, lab selection advice. They're looking for validation. Am I cut out for this? And for inspiration to keep going.
So for you, the listener, what's the takeaway here? The source argues the priority needs to be getting people back into research. What does that actually require?
Well, based on this, it seems clear it's not just about throwing more grant money at the problem, though funding always matters.
It needs something more fundamental.
It seems to require a real cultural shift, a rethinking of job stability, of promotion criteria, moving away from a system where even high achievers face the cliff edge of non-renewal.
Creating genuine career safety, not just this constant high-stakes competition.
That seems to be the core message. Otherwise, the pipeline issue will likely just continue.
Which leaves us with a final thought, maybe a provocative question.
Yeah, I think the question the sources implicitly raise is this. If you have professors being let go for not hitting specific paper counts.
Like the 20-paper rule.
Right. And if job openings often aren't real, competitive searches, what kind of unbelievable pressure does that put on early career researchers, the ones just starting out?
Immense pressure, surely.
Exactly. And then you have to ask, how does that pressure itself, the need to publish at all costs, to hit those numbers, how does that maybe inadvertently contribute to the very integrity problems the community is also fighting against?
Like the image manipulation, the temptation of predatory journals.
It suggests this potentially vicious cycle, doesn't it? The system creates pressure, the pressure potentially compromises integrity, and the lack of integrity further undermines trust and morale.
A cycle that, as the source suggests, urgently needs to be broken if Japanese science wants to truly recover and attract the next generation.
That seems to be the bottom line.